kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I'm your host, Joe. Joining me, as usual, Cole Martin. Cole, how are you doing?
I'm alive. It's morning, but it's not early, so we're okay.
Yeah, it is not 5 in the morning that we're doing an interview this time.
I've already been awake for 5 hours at this point.
But we are doing an interview today.
Ooh. We are.
Are you excited?
Always.
Are you?
Yeah. Are we going to leave the guests hanging, or are we going to let them say hi?
We'll let him say hi. Benjamin Hill of Advec Games. How are you doing today? Advec Productions, I'm sorry.
Advec Productions. I'm good, thank you. How are you guys? You seem all right? Happy? Not so early in the morning today.
We're awake. We are awake, and that is a wonderful, wonderful thing. Last week, no lie, last week we did an interview at 5 in the morning.
Oh, man. Tiring.
And we were exhausted.
Put a coherent sentence together. It was, the struggle was very real.
Oh, man.
But we're That's awake crazy. Now. You're awake now. It is I'm afternoon for you, late morning for us. Everyone is awake. So we're starting off on the right foot today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right side of the bed.
So for the people who don't know who are you? Why are you on the show?
Sure. So I'm a producer and director of video games. I produced and directed Cube 2, which came out a couple of weeks ago for PC, Xbox One, and PS4. And I presume we're going to talk a little bit about Cube 2 and just other stuff. So it's going to be exciting.
I mean, we might as well. It's why you're on. But for the people who don't know what Cube 2 is, give us the elevator pitch.
Absolutely. So Cube 2 is a sequel to the first person puzzle adventure game Cube that came out in 2012. It's a smart name, Cube 2, for that. And Cube 2, you play as like this stranded kind of archaeologist named Millie, who has mysteriously awoken in this ancient alien landscape. And together with the distant help of another survivor, you must kind of traverse and manipulate this like strange, weird cubic structure. So when you wake up on this planet, you are wearing this strange suit with these attached kind of gloves. And what you can do with these gloves is you can place different colored cubes into the alien landscape and then manipulate them. So blue cubes, you place those on the ground, you can stand on them and that'll launch you into the air like a launch pad. Red cubes, when you place them, you can grab them from a distance, like pull them out of the wall to create like pillars or like platforms or ledges. And you can place green cubes into the world, which create these kind of detachable cubes that react to kind of physics. And these things can kind of be combined together to kind of create like a huge variety of different kind of puzzles. And every environment you kind of go into, there's like loads of different technologies to interact with, creating kind of really tough kind of situations to kind of solve. And your goal is basically to kind of traverse this strange kind of environment, this strange place, rendezvous with this other survivor and find a way off the planet and back home. So
nice. It is a very, very entertaining game. I have not finished it myself. I've had an issue where I would find a blue panel on the ground and just bounce in place for way too long.
Oh, right.
Because simple things for simple minds.
It is like one of my favorite things in the game is bouncing on the blue cubes, and like particularly if you kind of get like a few of them in a row and you can just like ping yourself around the kind of space. But I won't ruin it, but later on in the game you can definitely do more of that.
Cole, did you beat the game? I'm not sure how far you got, or did you get too preoccupied bouncing on things?
I didn't get preoccupied bouncing on things, but I had a little too much fun just like making the green blocks fall into random places. I'm also easily amused.
We get distracted by shiny things.
That's great. I'm feeling sorry for the red block right now. Like, it needs to get some action, right? So
Like, what happens if I make this fall over here? What happens if I make this fall over there?
It's all about
it makes a good noise.
You got to put a red one on the floor and stand on it and then look down and just go up and down and up and down and up. And up. Again, simple things, simple minds.
No, it's good fun, and they make great noises as well. Like particularly the green cube, it makes it like clonk when it kind of like hits, you know. And actually, when we had a sound in the game that did not sound like that, like we kind of wanted to make this place feel a little like alien-y and organic at the same time. So both like, you know, kind of technological and but like it was an organic thing. And and at one point it sounded like, the best way I can describe it is like a wet basket. Like, when it landed, it made this like this sloshy noise. And so yeah, that didn't sit well. I didn't feel quite as good when it made that noise.
I would have been tickled by that though.
Yeah, oh no, it made us laugh. We were like, yeah, like our sound design is incredible. And I've, you know, when I was like, yeah, I kind of want this to sound like alien but not alien, like I confused him. So
see, now would that be something fun for an Easter egg, like after you already beat the game, it unlocks an option for alternate sound effects?
Yeah, I reckon so. The wet basket mod.
Yeah, you could have like a boing sound when something happens, like when you jump off the blue one, it just boing.
that'd be good.
Or the red one, when it goes off. When it goes up and down or in and out, it has like that little slide whistle of eep. I'm gonna ruin like your a, game like, with these suggestions.
No, it'd be like a toy box, wouldn't it, then? So like a toy mode.
I think that would be
some,
fun,
like, circus music in the background instead of David Howson's score, so.
Oh my god, that would be incredible. We're going to destroy your game with these suggestions.
It's such a serious, you know, emotional kind of game.
I've got a notepad that's called Cube 3, and it's like, I'm just writing these ideas all down right now. So.
You can take all the ideas, just give us a shout out in the credits. It's all we want.
Will do.
Oh, man. So I know the game was developed by Toxic Games. What was your role there, or is it like a joint production between Toxic and Advect?
So Advect's a slightly different kind of offshoot. It's a production company, and when we kind of make, we've been making, working in production with external studios for a little while. With Cube 2, actually, I started on that project before Advect became a thing. And I was kind of working with Toxic Games directly, and I have been for the last 18 months. On the project. So I was kind of brought on board essentially to manage the kind of project and ensure that it kind of was kind of moving forward, you know, and actually had like clear direction on what it was going to be.
Gotcha. So you went from freelancer to having your own production company now.
Yeah, completely. Yeah. So my history is in like writing and narrative design and games design. So I'd work like in a freelance capacity on games. I worked on, I wrote and directed a game called Ether One years ago for PC, or Ether One. And then I worked on a game called Duskers, which I was the writer on that and narrative designer. And then I worked on a game called Hue with the managing director of Cube 2, actually, which is how we kind of got to know each other.
Hue, is that the color platformer?
Yeah, mm-hmm. So I worked as an editor.
I loved that game so much.
That's brilliant. Yeah, I mean, that game was developed by Henry Hoffman with a studio called Fiddlesticks Games, and I was brought on board as a writer and an editor, basically, to try and get the story to connect with the colors and stuff like that. So
nice.
And then Cube, and then Cube 2. So yeah,
Cube and Cube 2. Hue, Cube and Cube 2.
Yeah. I didn't work on the original Cube, so I just came on Cube 2. So that was kind of like another challenge, right? So figuring out what came before and making sure that like people that really like that game, like whatever you do in the second one, you've kind of got to like make sure that they're like your primary kind of concern, right? Make it a good game. So
yeah, you
please those people. Don't want to upset the the fans of your franchise, right?
Yeah. I'm excited to hear that you worked on Hue. Hue is one of the very few games that I can brag. I was the first person on True Achievements website to complete the game.
Oh, really? That's brilliant.
So I was excited about that. That's my one claim to fame, I guess.
Yeah, it's good.
Not the 5-year-old podcast.
Again, simple things, simple minds.
I mean, that game's not simple. That game gets complicated. Like, some of those later puzzles are tough, man. So
some of the collectibles, too.
Oh, yeah, the little potion bottles. Yeah, they're tough to get to.
Yeah, that was definitely a rewarding game to complete. I really, really enjoyed that one.
That's awesome. I always thought that we could, we maybe could do a crossover, like, call it Hube.
You'd have to call it Hube 2, though, just to get that whole rhyme scheme going on.
Oh,
still.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, I mean, we always thought we called Cube 3 Cubed.
There you go.
Kind of makes sense. We could do Hubed.
Hubed, yes. and the music could be done. One of my old co-hosts is Chris Huber. So Hubed, but score by Huber. That would be fun. How else can we stretch this?
You, Huber, I don't know. We're running out now.
Huber cameo.
Hubert cameo, yeah. And he jumps on blocks, so...
Exactly.
I don't know, like, it's working. Like, the rabbit hole has opened up.
And then the sound effects with the goofy sound effect mode, when if your character can die in Hubed, it could just have, like, the sound effect of when you die in Hubert, the little cursing sound. Oh my god, what is wrong with me?
There we go, Cube 3, writing it down, so...
Keep that pen warm. We're going to give you shitty ideas this entire episode. That is our specialty on SML.
We do come up with some pretty horrible stuff.
We do. We have some good ones every now and then, but mainly, you know, it's just throw shit at the wall and see what sticks.
I mean, I think that's just game design. So,
So how did you get involved with Cube 2?
Well, I've been friends with the managing director at Toxic Games for like quite a while, and I'd been working with Henry on Hue, and the work that I was doing on that, you know, was going really well, and I went to GDC, and me and Dan met up, the managing director on Cube 2, and we were just talking about Cube, and whether it, you know, it's going to be a thing or not, this sequel, and he was at that kind of point in time, he was trying to find a way of kind of making it into a full experience, because we had this great prototype, which was just puzzles. But it was like, well, what's this world going to be? You know, what do we want the art to be like? What's the kind of context of the space? You know, what's the story going to be? All of these different kind of questions that he was struggling with. And so we started talking and kind of spitballing ideas and stuff. And yeah, he asked if I wanted to come on board, maybe to do a bit of writing, and then that kind of fell into place as being kind of a producer and kind of managing the project and making sure that I was kind of directing, bringing all those little bits together, like, you know, sound and game design, art and aesthetic, and working with these different people to make it what the game is today, really. So yeah, that's how I kind of got involved. It was a really organic experience in the indie kind of scene. It is very organic. You meet people, you share ideas, you realize that you've got a big loads of connections with, you know, everyone, and you kind of start sharing ideas, and I think that's how a really nice organic process of making cool stuff, right? So
as producer, you kind of had your hands in all of the pots.
Every single pot. I was pretty stretched, I was pretty stretched, quite thin on the kind of project, but it was a really great kind of learning experience. But yeah, definitely I coded like the music into the game. You know, I worked really closely with the composer David Housen on the kind of score, worked really closely with the art director Harry Kaur. I just have like really strange demands of people, so I'm just always kind of like asking them to do strange things, like in Cube, like, oh, I want the world to feel like it's alive, let's put weird tubes everywhere, you know, things like that. So to see what happens. You know,
cubes and tubes.
So you
know, that should have been the subtitle: Cubed Two, Cubes and Tubes.
cubed, tubed.
Oh no!
they're just gonna keep, you know, piling up. Just awful ideas gonna pile up until you can't escape them.
It's good. My book's getting full, so
Cube 3 is going to release, and we're going to see like one of these ideas show up in the game, and we're going to do a fresh interview, and you're going to be like, "Yeah, it slipped in. I didn't mean it. I'm so sorry. I apologize that that's in there. The goofy sound effects weren't part of the original design, but I did an interview, and I kind of got distracted. And I thought it was a fun idea. I didn't know. I apologize."
I think there's like a selling point to that, like, we came up with these random ideas and just threw them into a game, so.
Hey, the random ideas are sometimes the best ideas. I mean, yeah, mine definitely aren't, but.
Yeah. I guess the best way to kind of think about it is kind of the production side of my kind of job is like it, more the boring kind of, you know, making sure that we don't run out of money, which is always the primary concern, making sure that you know, we are moving forward with the production and not just kind of spinning on the spot, and kind of liaising with everybody who has like a stake in the game. And then as a director, that's kind of the same kind of role, but like on the creative side, right? So working with all of the different people that kind of have all the great kind of skill sets and kind of making sure that it all kind of connects together as best as possible. And it's not just like a bunch of random stuff. Playing the game a lot, changing the game up, making edits, etc. Trying to make it as best. My kind of job really is to make it the best experience possible.
Is there anything that was in the game that you took out or that just didn't flow too well?
There's quite a few bits and bobs that were taken out of the game.
Bits and bobs. I like that.
Yeah. I think there's some story stuff that came out of the game because of budget and kind of like time reasons, which is, you know, a bummer, but at the same time, like the puzzles, to me, the puzzles and the environments came first in Cube. So there's some stuff towards the like, I guess the kind of second half of the game where you kind of have to make a pretty harsh decision on, well, do we have the resources to do this in the way that we wanted? And if we don't, then what's the best solution to that kind of problem, right? There are a lot of puzzles that were taken out of the game that maybe like didn't flow properly. So like in difficulty, you know, some of them might have peaked a little bit too much or had like a mechanic that we didn't necessarily introduce properly. And there's definitely a few of those where maybe we were asking the player to do something that we hadn't really taught them properly to do before. And that kind of people would get to those puzzles and they just get stuck. So
any kind of examples of what you would expect someone to do that you didn't really go into detail on?
Well, there was one earlier on in the game. We actually do this later in the game because it made more sense then. But there was a puzzle, I guess, where we were asking the player to like have a green cube kind of move towards them. Like I think we have fans like in like sector 5 of the game that cubes can like float on and they get pushed by, you know, because it's like a wind force, and it gives like velocity to the green cubes. And we were asking the player to stand in front of it and as it blew towards them, like jump and land on it. So we were kind of using like a lot of like dexterity in the players, and then they'd like ride the cube over a gap and jump off it at the other end. And what we found is like the game was before that was all about like lining up the puzzles, like figuring out what the kind of sequence was, and then kind of just like prompting that sequence to solve the puzzle. And this was suddenly kind of bringing in a little bit more kind of that like jumping about and dexterity, and people were finding that really difficult just because it wasn't something that we'd really kind of, you know, taught the player to do properly. So there's like little things like that like, you know, were taken out of the game. And I kind of see games design as like a, it's kind of like sculpture. You kind of like make this like thing, this like chunky kind of prototype without much into it. And then you start smoothing off the edges, right? So, and start kind of making it into something that actually resembles a video game. I'm trying to think if there's any like big kind of areas. A lot of the environments changed from what the prototype initially was. We have a really nice overgrown area later in the game, which we kind of call the decayed area. I won't obviously spoil it for people listening, but that originally was like something quite different. More Indiana Jones, I'd probably say. So like a tomb or something.
I was gonna say, is it good Indiana Jones or is it like Kingdom of the Crystal Skull Indiana Jones?
Oh, it would have been good Indiana Jones for sure. So
mentioned Alien, so I wasn't sure which one you were going for.
Oh no, there's definitely aliens in Cube, but like and also I think early on in the game we did have death at some point, so which we removed. It didn't make sense to have death in this type of game, I don't think. And we only used it in like a couple of scenarios. Like I think one of them might have been being chased by a boulder. So
oh, wow.
You know, there's definitely Indiana Jones in there. And so, like, obviously what you do is, like, you get people to test out your game and you take it to shows and you get a lot of feedback from amazing players. And then you start kind of really honing in on what people are enjoying and start kind of stripping away some of that stuff that doesn't make sense, right?
Yeah. You mentioned shows. This leads to one of my favorite questions to ask. Do you have any fun stories from demoing the game of someone who is either unbelievably good at the game or someone who was just fucking awful at it?
I think, okay, so when we first, like, this isn't for anyone in particular, this is more an error on our part. Like, when we first showcased the game in its new iteration, so we were showcasing the prototype, like, at Gamescom 2016. It had no art in it. It was just like a prototype, like white box kind of thing, which was cool. But we probably shouldn't have been showcasing it at that point. It's like its learning curve, and people were really enjoying it and stuff, and that was fine. And then we showcased at Eurogamer Rest in London. I think it would have been like March in 2017. And what we did is we wanted to showcase as much of the game as possible. So we picked like Sector 5, this sector that's like after the tutorial area. We kind of put a really quick tutorial in. And what we had was people, they would literally, puzzles that we thought were really easy, people would just get stuck on. Like, and so we'd be like, yeah, come and play this awesome game. It looks really pretty. And, you know, it's got good puzzles. And people would just like play like two or three puzzles and just like not know what to do. And I'm stood there like looking at people playing going, oh my God, what have we done? We've made the most terrible game ever. Right? So, like, nobody knows how to play the game. We're not doing it. It's awful. It's awful. And so when we went to PAX, PAX West, the summer just gone, we just built a brand new demo from the beginning of the game and just took the beginning of the game, which was just a tutorial, and everybody's playing it. And I, in my head, I'm like, this is gonna be boring. It's just like puzzle room after puzzle room, right? It's like, it's just the tutorial of the game, and people loved it. Like, everybody completed it in like 20 minutes and it was perfect and it was really good. I mean, I guess it kind of happens with the whole game as well. Like, when we play through it, like, I can play through the game in like quite quickly, because I know all the answers to the puzzles. I'm not smart, so
cheater. And
so then you've kind of got to hypothesize like how long the game is. Like, you know, if you play like Uncharted or something, then the game has like a flow to it that is just, you know, this game is 12 hours long or whatever. But in a puzzle game, that's like super hard to gauge. So, like, we've always struggled with like, oh, demoing the game, like, how long is the demo going to be? 20 minutes, 15 to 20 minutes is always a good time, right? But you don't want the player to just be like 15 minutes on one puzzle. Like, yeah. You know, you want them to see like little bits of it and stuff. So I can't say we've got anything like really kind of crazy, but from showcasing, we did have a bad bug problem once, where we had this great feature, which we thought it was a great feature, where if you on the PC, like if you kind of tab out of the game, it'll pause it for you. So you wouldn't miss anything or mess up or anything. So if you accidentally popped out of your window, it paused the game. But we took it to a show and we were showcasing it, and on the computers that we were using, they had like a Team Viewer, which allowed you to remotely take control of another computer if something's going wrong.
Yeah.
And what it does, it's an overlay over the game, so all it did was pause the game, and we couldn't get out of the pause screen.
Oh, and so no.
Minutes to go, like, you know, like, or so I mean, more like hours to two kind of minutes for the show kind of opening, we had to ring, and our programmer wasn't with us, and we had to ring the programmer up, and we're like, you know, John, can you get us a new build and take this feature out because it's messing it up? And he managed to do it. Unfortunately, he's had a very stressful time making this game, but
got a few new gray hairs.
Just has me ringing him up and panicking, so like, about something. We need to fix this bug now. We need to make a new game. So.
He deserves a present for all the work he's done. Say a brand new chicken.
Oh yeah. I mean, he lives in South Wales, which is known for its farming communities.
Oh, there we go. There we go, Cole. Now we need some addresses. Yeah. No one knows what the hell we're talking about with this, but. That's what I love doing on this show, is referring to stuff that is not part of the show. So people are just fucking confused. Like, why are they talking about chickens now? What the hell's going on? Oh, man. Cole, do you have any questions? I feel like I've been hogging all the questions.
You have been hogging all the questions.
Okay, I'll slide back over here now. I have to turn away when it's her turn because I'll just keep asking shit.
My main question is that given that the game focuses on manipulating cubes to solve puzzles, how do you keep that from becoming repetitive?
Yeah, so the way that we tackle it in the game is we really wanted what the player could do to be something simple enough that they can learn it quickly, and then they can apply it in many different scenarios. And so to stop it becoming repetitive, what we did was each kind of what we call them sectors, though they're just called chapters in the game, but like each sector of the game that is kind of loaded in usually has a new what we call technology. Mm-hmm. And that kind of modifies the way you interact with the space around you. And then the more that you get into the game, the more those things start to combine together to create complex kind of solutions. So the way you use blue cubes, the way you use red cubes, the way you use green cubes suddenly change, and you can use those things in different ways that you couldn't use before for different scenarios. So when we first introduced green cubes, a green cube is just used as like a platform tool for the player to be able to jump up to like a higher ledge or something along those lines. So you're pinging it around, you know, with the blue cubes, combining those together to kind of make it land on a red cube. So you get steps to go up to the exit door. Yeah. And then as the game develops, suddenly you're not using it just for you, you're using it to hit switches, you're using it to you're covering it in like a weird black oil goo to set it on fire to open up doors, you know, suddenly all these technologies start combining together or propel using, we have these magnet pads which are really good, and one of my favorite things in the game to do is like fire a green cube over a magnet pad that's deflecting, so it'll kind of float across and it looks like great, it feels amazing when you do it, so it kind of just like bounces a kind of across. So applying these three colors to kind of new technologies and then combining those technologies together creates kind of the variety in the game. And then we give something later on in the game as well, which is so simple, but I think it does add a lot of variety. One of the wishes, I guess, is I wish we could have taken that further, and that's something that we're hoping to do with within our season pass. So and the ability just extends how you can use all of those colors. I think it's kind of important to say that obviously at the beginning of the game you can only place one color of each mm-hmm. on the panels, you can't play more than one, and that kind of develops throughout the game as well, so suddenly you have more opportunity to experiment.
So you could just launch a shitload of green cubes.
Yeah, I think in our theatrical trailer, I think I tease that there's like two green cubes flying through the air. I don't know if there's any point where you have to do that, but it just feels good to do that, right? So,
there were so many times that I would just, you know, set up the blue panel, set up a green one above it, like you're supposed to, so you could drop the green and launch it, and then I would jump in the way of the green cube to just nail me. And I don't know why I got a kick out of that, but I would just giggle every time I had the opportunity, and then I would move on with the puzzle.
I think there's something cubes kind of like this kind of like, I always kind of see it as like a bit of a science fiction kind of B movie. It takes itself a little seriously, but it's like a bit weird and there's like quirky bits to it. And like always like firing a green cube into your face and then the avatar not having any reaction to that always amuses me. So, it's just like, oh, that's fine. That's just what happens in this world. So,
just shrug it off, get smacked in the face by a green cube. No, I'm good.
Yeah. It's the life of an archaeologist on an alien planet. So
my eyes aren't watering at all. That didn't hurt. I'm good. Call any other questions?
The two main characters that we are introduced to in the game are both female. Was that a conscious design choice, or was it just that they felt right for the story? How did they come about, and what more can you tell us about them?
Sure. So they came about because they felt right within the writing. I wrote the story for Cube 2, And I, for all the games that I've kind of worked on, I have a natural habit of writing female protagonists, right? It's I grew up in a very a female-oriented kind of family, so it just feels really natural to me. But
it's
you write
bonus points with me.
so you know, I think as a writer, you write what you're comfortable with necessarily, mm-hmm. and then you explore different characters in that kind of capacity. I've written male, you know, lots of male characters as well, but for me, I really wanted to thematically explore. I think the game kind of explores this idea of kind of growth and organic versus inorganic, and both. He's not really the antagonist, but the third character in the game, without kind of spoiling it, mm-hmm. is kind of almost a maternal kind of character as well. And for me, kind of Millie, the main character, was also like that as well. So, she's also, I really wanted, I feel like I wanted this character that was kind of adventurous in kind of a day job and was maybe kind of torn by not being kind of home a little bit, and suddenly you're in this alien environment and all those emotions are kind of swirling around with it, with a what the fuck's kind of going on situation, right? So they just felt kind of, you know, when, you know, those characters felt natural for the role. For the second character, Emma, I just wanted somebody who was strong and militant as a kind of character. She comes across as condescending in some aspects, mm-hmm. and that's kind of purposeful, because I want you to not trust her. and I also, like, I think Cube One, which I didn't write, I feel very much is like an allegory of video games itself. It's you get given an objective and then you get told what to do, and you just do it. So you don't really question what you're doing in a video game. You just kind of go along with the objective, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas, so that's kind of, that game kind of played with that, and we're kind of doing that in Cube 2 as well, right? But taking it to a slightly different level. So for me, I wanted, you know, this character Millie to be a strong kind of character who is curious about the world around her, who, although she's phased at the fact that she's in this space, she's strong enough just to react to the situation. But at the same time, this other character, Emma, is kind of telling her what to do, and she's just at face value doing that, and she's embodying what the player does, and it feels like eerily odd, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
it feels like a peculiar feeling. It feels like something's not right, and there's a mystery in that. And the point is it's not right. You're just doing what you're told, right? So
yeah,
we kind of took play around with that a little bit towards the back end of the game and try and give an alternative kind of expression. But no, when writing, you know, we write characters. I like to think that writers write characters that feel right just for those kind of dramatic roles. So that's the best way to approach it. I just happen to write female characters because I feel comfortable, and I don't see the differentiation, if that makes sense. So
I like that immediately upon interacting with Emma, my first response was, what's she gonna do to me?
Yeah.
Like, you're immediately like, she's too helpful and shit's gonna go sideways.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so you did a really good job at characterizing her with that, because just as soon as she opens her mouth, you're just like, wait.
Yeah. There's something not right about this person. I don't know if you guys have played the first game, but that's a kind of a similar, there's a similar opening in that sense of you wake up and there's this female character, and you're just like, hang on a minute, I don't know if this is right. Like, I've not been given enough information to form an opinion, right? But I've been told to form an opinion almost immediately. So and that just makes you feel pretty uncomfortable. Yeah, I don't know. I think it's kind of interesting. We kind of wanted to cap. I think some of the stuff we had to take out of the game, which is more visual storytelling, which would have capitalized on some of this a little bit more. I feel like it would have been good to have it in there. But again, I think the puzzles were the kind of primary focus for us. So, but I'm glad that you're not trusting her. So that's what we wanted. So
you mentioned content being.
What'd
you say?
Go ahead, Joe.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Okay, I'm allowed.
Yeah, it's your show. You can talk.
You mentioned content being removed, and then earlier you mentioned a season pass. Could we see some of that removed content make its way back through DLC?
I think maybe some of the ideas that we had to remove that didn't work in the main game might come back. But we're kind of trying to approach it with fresh eyes, I think, for what we want to do. The first DLC pack that we're going to be doing, and it's on PC at the moment. We have plans for consoles, but it's going to be coming to Steam first. We have a classic Glufskin pack, which should be dropping this week, which is really exciting. So for those that played Cube 1, we're bringing back the old motocross style gloves that you can have in, and they look really interesting. Harry Cole's done an amazing job of almost like kind of taking them out of the old game, which is done in a different engine, and, you know, kind of applying them into the new game. And they look great with the new animations. And then we're doing a classic puzzle pack, which should be coming like Q3, I think. So that's like summertime. We don't have a definite date for that yet, but that's what we've kind of earmarked it for people who have purchased the season pass. And that's going to be like around about 10 kind of new puzzles that are much tougher. Play around with the mechanics in new ways, the existing mechanics, and also looks at maybe a slightly different approach to level design, so which is going to be interesting. And it's going to be set within the classic kind of structure of the cube for the first game. So
now, will there be a narrative stringing those puzzles together, or is it just going to be like puzzle then puzzle then puzzle?
This is going to be hardcore puzzles. So this is not going to be, it's got a context to it for people that played the first game. So it kind of fits within it if you're interested in that, in the like the narrative of the game, but we're not writing an overt narrative for it. We really wanted to appease those hardcore puzzle fans, right? So it's not going to be, one of the things that we're going to do is it's not going to be puzzle after puzzle after puzzle, in the sense of it's a linear kind of string of puzzles. We're going to give you options of what puzzles to tackle in different orders, like we do at some parts in the main game, because we're going to ramp that difficulty up. So you're going to get stuck, and then you're going to want to go back to them later on, I think. So
there's no fucking around in these new puzzles that are going to show.
No, it's a great thing about the DLC is like in a main kind of game, we have to be very conscious of difficulty and ensuring that when people pick up the game, that they're kind of getting a great experience, they're getting their money's worth, they feel like they can play through it and get to the end of the experience, right? Yeah. I think I find that really kind of important. Some games have difficult curves. Like, I love hard games, like Dark Souls is like, and Bloodborne, like my favorite games ever, right? So they actually have quite good difficulty curves still. They're hard, but once you get past that initial ledge, then they actually work their way up quite easily. But in puzzle games, because we're essentially asking you to be smart, like if you suddenly start feeling really stupid, that I think that's quite a bit different to feeling like you need to get better at playing the game. Like, you know, skills, like player skills, a bit different to mind skill. So we kind of like make sure that we try and work hard to make people, help people like through experience, kind of learn how to play the game, and then still have those like aha moments. I figured it out, you know, like, you know. Whereas with the DLC, we can be a bit, we can be meaner.
No mercy.
Now it's just time to throw you in the pit.
Yeah. So, you know, we can really, really challenge people, and it's going to be in a really amazing environment. It's going to be really cool. We're really looking forward to getting it out there. The team's kind of working on that at the moment. And then we have another puzzle pack, which I can't really talk about at this moment in time, and we still need to figure some stuff out with it. They'll be coming later on in the year. So
two puzzle packs and brand new gloves,
and you also get the soundtrack as well with the season pass, which is a great soundtrack. So
do console gamers get the soundtrack as well, or is that a Steam only thing?
At the moment it's a Steam only thing, but you can buy the soundtrack like on iTunes, so, you know, anybody can pick that up if they want. We are looking at ways of bringing obviously the extra content to consoles at the moment, but it's just something that we have to kind of look at in a little bit more detail. So
yeah, I know PlayStation has a way to do soundtracks on their end. I don't think Xbox has anything on their side to do soundtracks, which I think is a bummer. I love it. Yeah. When games offer soundtracks with them.
I'm not sure.
I think it's something that could have worked if Groove weren't dead, but they killed Groove, and now it'll never happen.
Oh, man. Microsoft giving up on products. What a surprise, huh?
I've been playing on my Xbox tons at the moment. I've been playing Sea of Thieves like crazy.
And oh, man. Any fun stories for Sea of Thieves? Anything fun happen with you in the game so far?
Oh, I just die all the time.
I'm not alone.
last night I was playing the game and talking about chickens, right? This is a chicken story. So I was playing on my own. I've been playing with my friends a lot, you know, but I was playing on my own. I thought I'm going to go out there on my own. I'm going to, what is it? Sloop it up. Sloop. And so I got my boat. I'm like, I've got a bit of experience now. I feel like I know the game. And I go out and I realize that my merchant kind of level is not as good as all my other, like, I've collected a lot of skulls, so the spooky guys are all happy. I've got a lot of gold, so that everyone, the gold hoarders are really cool, but the merchants, like, those kind of missions are like way more long-winded. So I, like, if I've only got a few minutes, like, we generally pick the other ones. So I thought I'm gonna go and get some chickens or pigs or whatever you do with those those quests. So I got one. It's to get these two different variations of chickens, and I get on my boat and I kind of start going off on my kind of quest, and then another little ship starts chasing me, and I'm like, oh well, I haven't got anything, so if I sink, that's not a bad idea, right? It's not a bad thing, but I'm gonna try and avoid this. So this guy chases me, and I kind of go through these rocks that are in the kind of ocean, and I kind of weave in and out of them, and I feel like I'm doing a really good job, and I am at this point, and this guy that's behind me crashes into it and sinks, and I'm like, yes, I'm the best pirate in the world. Incredible. This is awesome. So I go off to one of the islands, and I get off, and going around, I have this kind of cage, and I put two chickens into the cage and get back on my boat, and I'm like, right, I'm going to go back and get, you know, level up this merchant kind of reputation. And as I'm going back, I see a wrecked ship of the ship that sunk. So I'm like, oh, that guy's ship's over there. I wonder if it's got any, like, you know, stuff on it for me to get. So rather than, you'll understand what I mean, is like, rather than me slowing down gradually and then coming to a stop and dropping my anchor, and then getting out of the boat, I'm going past it quite fast. I'm like, I want to get into that boat and find out this treasure, drop the anchor, do a handbrake turn quite close to the rocks. And I think the boat's all right. And I just jump off and start swimming down into this boat. And I go into the boat and I find like a load of tea, like rare tea. And I'm like, well, that's worth something, right? So I grab the rare tea and start swimming up. And then as I get to the top, I look out on my boat and I swim over to it and I try to get onto the ladder and it won't let me. I'm like, why is it not letting me get on the ladder? And then I'm really close to the boat, right? And I'm like, hang on a minute. And I swim back a bit and the boat is just sinking slow. I'm like, and all I could think about was the poor chickens on the boat. Like, I was like, my chickens, like, my fiance was just like, are you okay? What's going on? I'm like, oh, my chickens have sunk. So, like, and for the life of me, I'm holding on to this box of rare tea, and I don't want to let go of it, but I know I'm going to have to go to the mermaid and find my ship again. So go to the mermaid, and I've just lost everything that was on that ship.
Oh, and I thought, man.
My greed as a pirate, like, you know, if after all of that daredevil escaping, I'm kind of foiled by my own greed.
Oh, the worst is having the tea and not being able, you're just sitting there holding the tea like, well, fuck, son of a bitch.
This box that's worth some money. I mean, I could have swum all the way back to the outpost, but it would have taken me a while. So, yeah.
I wonder if anyone's tried doing that, where instead of taking a boat, they just swim somewhere.
The sharks will probably get you eventually. Yeah,
I'm pretty certain that if you're in the sea,
because you only get five shots.
I can hear your chickens. It's like a horrible haunting.
That's what they sounded like when you drowned yours.
I don't know if you've ever taken one of those chickens underwater in one of the cages, but they just start panicking. It's awful.
Uh-huh. Yeah, oh, so God, that was the timing of that cluck too. Lord.
So yeah, that was my whole experience of playing it yesterday lunchtime. So like my entire like half an hour of playing the game did not yield any rewards.
I think that's my favorite part with Sea of Thieves, is that you just get these crazy, crazy stories that you could tell. I think the game needs more content, but what's there can provide such crazy fun stories to tell with friends. Oh,
yeah. Stories with, I mean, the other day we were sailing a boat, and as all good pirates do, that you just drink a lot of grog and get really drunk on the ship and start being sick everywhere. Oh, yeah. And so one of my friends was trying her hardest to kind of steer the ship whilst me and two other friends were very drunk, not paying attention to what's going on. And all of a sudden it's like, where's Steve gone? Steve was too drunk and fell off the boat is now miles away in the sea. He's like, please stop the boat. Like,
not too late. We'll miss you. Have fun.
Drop the anchor and do a handbrake turn. So.
No, that's when they log out and then just rejoin the game.
Oh yeah, I've had to log out a few times. So,
like, we're not turning around. Fuck that. We have shit to do.
No, it's great. I've really enjoyed the experience. I think there could be more, but I think it's almost smart to kind of get like that base kind of sandbox game in there first, and then start maybe adding more content later down the line. So,
yeah.
People are enjoying
any Kraken experiences.
Yeah, a little bit of Kraken experience. It was pretty frightening the first time it happened. I was just like, we were just kind of going along the sea, and then suddenly the sea just went dark, like pitch black underneath us. And we were like, this eerie, scary music kind of started playing. And we were like, what is going on? What is happening now? and all of a sudden these tentacles came up, and we survived. We didn't kill it, but we managed to escape it. So,
oh, nice.
Just blamming, you know, like the cannonballs into its tentacles to kind of stop it. But it, like, if it grabs you, it like flings you miles away. So, I think it's cool. We've only encountered it once. I know some people are complaining that it kind of happened too often, but we play quite a bit, and I think I've only seen the Kraken once.
I haven't seen it at all yet.
No,
I've heard rumors that it doesn't spawn around sloops.
Ah.
And so I don't know if there's any truth to that, but I'm always playing like as a two-man crew with my friends, and we've never seen it.
Right.
It's possible. I know my buddy Chris was telling me a story where he, you know, he did some kind of mission. He had a bunch of skulls on his sloop because he was just like one-manning a bunch of shit, and he was heading back to port when a galleon started chasing him. And, you know, yeah, he's in a sloop, so he could go a bit faster. So he's moving. They would turn and fire cannons at him and miss. He would just keep going. He got about a mile away from him, and he turned around. He was going to spin the boat and just start firing at them because he, for some reason, he's an amazing shot with the cannons. He spun the boat around to look at the galleon, and he just saw tentacles pop up around the galleon.
Yeah, that's exactly. They kind of, like, I don't know how many of them, it's like 8, 10, like there's loads of tentacles that just kind of come up like everywhere. You get totally surrounded, and it kind of moves with you as well. So you can escape from it, but it's like tough, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. Like it was pretty, and like it'll like smash into your ship. And so you've got to have somebody downstairs, like repairing all the holes, and you're flooding, and someone's like throwing buckets of water over the side, like, you know, just absolutely manic. Like, I mean, I can't say our crew is very good at fighting. We tried to take over a boat the other day, and it was a little boat, and the little boat destroyed us. So, like, just jumped on our boat, dropped our anchor, and then just camped in the spawn points, and just so every time we came back on the boat, it just killed us.
Oh, God, that is awful.
Yeah,
they were originally going to have like where you had to pay gold if you died to get off the Ferry of the Damned.
Oh, that would suck. I would be completely poor.
Spawn campers, I would just be like, I wouldn't even bother playing. I'd be like, fuck this.
Like, log out. Yeah. I'll play a different, I'll, you know, join a different game instead.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they ended up taking it out because it was, everybody had a piss fit about it. Rightfully so. It's a bad idea.
Oh, that would suck.
I think you lose enough, don't you, when you die? So,
yeah, because
like
if,
chickens,
you know, if you've
and
got anything on your boat,
box of tea. So,
like, poor chickens. Those poor drowned chickens. Down there with Hammy, right,
all
Cole?
Speaking of Hammy, all the starved pigs.
Oh, God.
Because people didn't realize they had to feed the pigs.
Oh, yeah, you have to feed them bananas, don't you? Yeah, we lost the pig. we lost a pig when we did. It was making a lot of noise, and we should have realized it was absolutely starving after about 5 minutes. I don't know how fast these things eat, but it didn't last very long. So.
I think that's why I avoid the merchant quest, because I don't want to deal with a hungry pig and feeding it bananas. When those are for me, those are for when I'm dying, because I die enough the way it is.
My favorite thing is when you're underwater and you start drowning, and so you make that noise of, like, you know, panicking, and you just keep eating bananas. casually crunch some bananas, like, you
know, I can't breathe, but this banana is gonna help me. Om nom nom.
Potassium for the win.
Crunching nanners. Gotta love
bananas, yeah. What wonderful words.
there's some
pretty good achievements. I had a look through the achievement list, and there's a great achievement where if you kind of put chunder in somebody else's face whilst they're trying to kill you and then kill them, you get an achievement for that. So
yeah, there's some crazy stuff in the game. Is that leading to any inspiration for future cube achievements of, like, throwing up on a puzzle?
Oh, maybe. I mean, maybe that's something we can add into the circus.
Add Grog to Cube 3.
I think Grog should be in every game now. I think that's absolutely a must. So
Grog my mechanics. Favorite thing to do.
Yeah, it really simulates being drunk quite well. I mean, you get drunk very quickly. Like, but I thought pirates were maybe to handle more, but I don't know what Grog's made of.
That's got to be strong if it fucks you up that quick.
It does, yeah.
That's what we call rot gut.
Yeah.
I wonder, once you know, you're going to rot your gut for good.
Way to do it. Oh, man. Well, I know we've been chatting for quite a while. Is there anything about Cube that we didn't ask you that you want to talk about now that we spent 20 minutes talking about Sea of Thieves instead?
Well, I don't know. I don't think there's anything that we haven't, like, majorly kind of covered. You know, it's a puzzle game. It's obviously out now for PC, Xbox One, and kind of PS4 at this moment. It's pretty much on every kind of, like, we like to support, like, all the small kind of indie stores, like, so we released on Humble GOG and Green Man kind of Gaming as well, so yeah, people seem to be really enjoying it, which I'm really happy about. You know, we've got, like, I think mainly positive kind of, I can't remember what all the review stuff is on Steam, reviews on Steam. People are really enjoying the game anyway, so yeah.
PlayStation, Xbox, computer, any Switch plans?
We would love to bring it to the Switch. There are plans, but we can't say anything about it right now. So
I'll take that as concrete confirmation.
Yeah, we're really interested in the Switch. I love the Switch, like, massively. I'd love Cube to come to the Switch. So, but we'll just have to see how things kind of go. And I mean, that's the same for, like, Mac and Linux and stuff like that as well. They're things where we will always explore and see if it kind of works out. So we use Unreal Engine 4, so, which is amazing. So it really helps us kind of get things across to other platforms and stuff like that. So
what is next for you?
For me?
Yes.
So we made a few kind of experimental games in the summer last year. And I released them through Humble Monthly at Christmas time. They were part of the Humble Originals kind of program. Mm. And we released a game called Thorn and Crescent Bay under Advect Productions. And we've had like a ridiculous amount of people have downloaded those games. I think it's like 50,000 people per kind of game have downloaded it and played it. We've had a huge amount of people kind of contact us and tell us how kind of great, you know, the games are. And so for me, it's a slightly different team than Toxic Games. You know, we're working on stuff with Toxic Games as well. We're focusing on downloadable content at the moment with those guys and supporting Cube 2 and supporting the Cube 2 fans. But for me, the next thing is to look at one of those Humble Originals and hopefully developing it into a full-blown kind of title, so, which is really exciting. So hopefully we should maybe talking about that. We just gave an update to Thorn, actually, like a patch for it, and it's like a really short, trying to explain what Thorn is. We call it a first person job simulator, and it's essentially like a clicker game in first person in a beautiful 3D world. Where you play as a citizen who's locked in your apartment, and you have to kind of do these jobs on these clicker machines with a giant AI head watching you all the time. So, it's like a dystopian a dystopian thing. And she's like really lovely to you. She's called Thorn, and but she's also got some dark secrets, you know, about the world around you. So that was a bit of an experimental game. We just wanted to make a clicker with a story, and I think we were pretty successful with that. You guys should check it out. So
could we see that hitting consoles at all?
If we make it into a large title, then absolutely. So. So at the moment we're kind of trying to find options of kind of getting it off the ground. So
gotcha.
Yeah, but so, that's our focus. So
nice. So where can people keep up to date with what you're doing, what your company's doing? How can people just keep up to date with your day to day?
Sure. So for Cube stuff and for Toxic Games, you can go to cube2game.com. You can find Cube Game on Twitter and on Facebook as well. And we like post updates all the time about how the game's kind of doing, updates on when DLC is going to be released, or, you know, discounts on, you know, consoles and Steam and stuff like that. So if you're interested in playing like a beautiful first person puzzle adventure game, then, you know, check that out and kind of follow us, and that's the best way to kind of get info on that. For the stuff that we're doing next, with the more experimental and, you know, stuff, you can find Advect Games on Twitter, or you can go to advectproductions.com online, and you can kind of check the games out through that. Or if you subscribe to Humble Monthly through Humble Bundle, you can actually play Thorn and Crescent Bay right now through accessing the Humble Trove, which is really cool. So
I might have to subscribe just so I could check out Thorn and the floating head.
Yeah,
of judgment, just staring at you and judging you.
Yeah, so we're gonna have some more news on the stuff that we're doing with Advect this year, but we're not quite sure when yet. So
nice. Well, definitely keep us updated. It has been awesome having you on the show to chat. Everyone else, stick around. We're gonna take a quick break. We will be back with more show. Benny, do you have any final words to end the interview?
I've really enjoyed the interview. It's good to chat to you guys. I'm struggling with the memories of my chickens right now, but you know it'd be cool if people can check out Cube 2. It's out now, so yeah, awesome.
Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for hanging around. Another big thanks to Benny for dropping by and chatting with us. But we have more show to do, more reviews to take care of, because that's what we fucking do on this show anymore. We are starting off. Pernell Vaughn, you're here. How are you tonight?
I'm doing well. How are you doing, sir?
I'm here.
I hear that. Well, at least we're hating. In typical tradition, the weather's getting nicer, so that's great.
For now, I swear, every Tuesday episode that you're on, Tuesday, Wednesday, whatever fucking day this is out now, everyone, we're talking about weather anymore.
That's why I was like, in our traditional fashion, like, I got to bring up the weather.
Is there any snow on the way that I'm not aware of?
God, freaking hoping not. It's already melted. The melt boatload we got the other day is already pretty much gone.
How much did you guys get down there?
Like 9 to 10 inches of snow.
Oh, shit.
And it was gone in less than a day. It pretty much melted in a day. It was insane.
We got a trace, maybe 1 inch, 2 inches tops, and it all melted right away.
We got pummabubbled.
Pummabubbled?
Yeah, that's right. Pummabubbled.
Was it so bad it made you want to murder people?
No, quite frankly, I have video games, so if anything, I was fine. Now, yeah, if I didn't have a video game.
I was trying to segue into the first game about murdering people.
Oh, no, I was doing. God damn it. All right. I totally dropped the ball on your clear intentions.
The virtual murder. Let's get that straight. Virtual murder, not real murder,
yeah,
people.
Virtual.
That could lead to the first game tonight to talk about. It is called Slay Away Camp Butcher's Cut, developed by Blue Wizard Digital and Stage Clear Studios, published by Digirati. Released March 22nd on the Switch for $14.99. Experience a new dimension of gut-churning terror as an unspeakable force of skull-faced killing maims and murders his way through smart-mouthed, oversexed, substance-abusing young adults. No teenager is safe in the summer horror blockbuster smash hit of 1984. Purnell, tell us about Slay Away Camp.
Slay Away Camp is addicted as shit. Didn't expect that. Like, I don't even do, like, we've had this conversation. Me and murdery games are like, yeah, I don't know how I feel about that. But I was more intrigued than trying it because when you sent me the info on it, I was like, so it's a puzzle game, but it's Minecraft murder. Okay, I can deal with that. So, essentially, you are playing through various parody horror movies, mostly titled in some area, some way of Slay Away Camp, but using like different villains. Like at one point, for example, I'm still not sure if the villain was meant to be a joke on Jason's mother or Norman Bates' mother. But since Norman Bates' mother was Norman Bates, I'm going to guess Jason's mother. Anyway, the point is you are essentially playing what amounts to a sliding block puzzle game, as in you're trying to slide a block around a maze. But the stylistic choice is that you're not just sliding into pinball pits or dials or switches. You're sliding into people and thereby murdering them when you knock into them. So it might be a level where it'll be a person looking off in the distance and there's like a couple like, you know, walls set up between you and them. So you have to bop, 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 bop around them, kill them, and then bop, bop, bop to whatever weird random stairwell exists, like the exit point, which you can customize. And I made mine RPG downstairs dungeon stairwell. So of course I would, because it's nice. Me. So it would be ridiculous if you're like, well, if it's just a sliding block puzzle game, where's the fun? And the fun is, one, kiss my ass if you think sliding block puzzle games aren't fun. And two, they added a few like twists and twips using the environment to make it funny or make it a little bit more different than you expect. So for example, you might have police officers on a stage, and if there's a level with police officers on it, they're looking in a direction and they have a crosshair in front of them. And if you crash and stop on the crosshair, they arrest you. And there goes your killing spree, because you're only man with man-made murder, not murder-made man. So you're essentially you're dodging that for them. So you have to make sure you kill the police officers from their blind spots, or you have to just not kill them entirely and go for the campers. There'll be other areas, for example, like there'll be, say, a campfire laid out. If the campfire is down, if you run into it, you'll catch fire. But if you happen to stop next to a camper and they see you, they will freak out and run and potentially run into the fire and set themselves ablaze. And if another camper is near that fire and sees that person burning, they will run off. Because you can kind of chain fiery death across all the different environments. And there's other things too, like you might deal with like drowning. Or my favorite in this game is bookshelves, where you might come across a room where guys are hiding behind bookshelves. You can push the bookshelf on them and kill them, But then the bookshelf ends up being a place where you can't pass anymore. It's a new bumper. So sometimes at the time when they use the actual, at the time when they actually use the bookshelf and when not to use the bookshelf. So it ends up being pretty fun as far as like solving all the different puzzles. It's not a game that I've never really gotten stuck into anything. It's just been one that was like nice puzzle solutions. It's a meaty volume of puzzle solutions. So you're constantly moving through the game. Kind of like, I guess I would compare it to Captain Toad's Treasure Tracker, not in the same style of game, but in the sense of how you get through puzzles easily, but you do feel like you did something when you get through each one.
So even though it's not super difficult, there is that sense of accomplishment.
Exactly. Like, I actually enjoy solving the puzzle. I'm not sitting there going, man, what a waste of my time. I'm going, oh, wow, I'm glad I solved that level. That was funny. And then there's a couple weird ones, too. Like, I'm not sure how many there are total because I haven't beaten every movie. But I got to the end of one of the movies, and I thought it was amazing how for the final scene of the film, it was a guy singing at a campfire, like, with actual lyrics. And the game was shut him. The mission was shut him up. So you're basically trying to get through this intricate maze of bumpers to murder this singer. And the whole time he's like, friendship is the answer. Friendship is the way. I'm like, oh my God, I want to kill him. Please. I just got to kill this guy. So every time you start over, he's still fucking singing. Got to get there though.
Oh God.
And worth mentioning in addition, so aside from the normal game stuff like that, in between every stage, there might be a little quick murder mini game where it's just like a sliding bar going between, like, think like a golf game where you're trying to hit the sweet spot to hit the ball. But the sweet spot in this case is successful murder. And if you hit the sweet spot on the sliding bar, your successful murder will result in you earning coins, which will go coupled with the coins you earn from finishing a movie, which you can take back to the video store that the game's kind of overlaid under. And you can buy like close-up of murder scenes that you pull off, because sometimes you'll get like a quick shot of a murder, like, oh, wow, he stabbed a pitchfork to the guy and popped his head off. You can buy murder scenes. You can buy murderers that you found. And you can put money into like a mystery box to get the occasional murder that you can't earn from actual films. So you can get secret murderers. And they range from like all the different horror movie tropes. Like I said, the old woman is like weird alien mutant people. So like I wish you could do like tentacle murders or something like that, but it's still just thematic right now. You don't get to actually say get tentacle powers now. It's just your tentacle monster. But even with that aside, I find the game to be a great time. I enjoyed every bit of it. The music is good. It's thematically thematically sound, and it's humorous murder, not murder.
Yeah.
So it also worth pointing out two things. One, if you don't like the goriness aspect, there are options to actually set even the block murder down. So even if you're not down with that, you can pretty much set to like non-existent, like it'll be like just like the guy will probably like disappear from the screen and not actually die, like get a murder death. And I think it's kind of fun how they did a thing like in the options where it's like a sliding bar, you know, different menus, like, you know, volume, slide bar, and yeah. Sound of slide bar. There's a slide bar for slide bar. Slide the slide bar. More options show up at the bottom so you can keep sliding down. It was a really weird thing. I may have spoiled the humor from some people, but it's,
oh my God.
It's still enjoyed even if I told you it existed. It's just worth noting.
I've had this game downloaded for a while and I've never gotten a chance to fire it up, but just because there's a slider for more sliders, I think I'm going to play it tonight.
You'll like it. I have no doubt of it. No doubt in my mind. And I think the content is there to justify that cost too. It's fun.
Nice. Did it play well on the Switch?
It sure did. Nice pick up and pay punch. If you die and you want, you can either, there's a rewind button that's a simple trigger. You press the trigger, you rewind moves. If you want to do the whole level over again, you can press the Y button and it immediately pops you back into the start of the level. Oh, I forgot there's also some levels where you have limited moves. So in the main case, it's usually kill everyone and escape before the SWAT team arrives. That's what the mission title will be. So there's like levels like that too. But yeah, it plays very well on the Switch. Buttons do what they're supposed to do. No lag, no delays. Loading is pretty nice as far as like going between levels too. It doesn't take very long.
Nice. So $15 on this one. What is your verdict?
I think if you like puzzle games and you want that zen, it's worth it. It was a great buy.
Sounds good. Like I said, I got to play this one myself. Just slider for sliders. It's that kind of humor that wins my heart every time.
Oh, yeah, in that case, you will be a fan. Between that and, like, the VHS, like, lines and stuff like that, I feel like this is one of those games where it's like a sleeper hit of sorts. Like, obviously, it's not going to get, unfortunately, it's not going to be like a Game of the Year awards or anything like that. But as far as like a game I can recommend to a friend on the Switch that isn't going to pop up on a bunch of other recommendation lists, that kind of sleeper, where I feel like more people should know it exists to play it because it's pretty fun.
Nice. Well, moving on, next game to talk about is called Azure Saga Pathfinder, developed and published by Mass Hive Media, released March 13th on Steam for $12.99. Dive into the world of Azure Saga Pathfinder and band together to search for the legendary planet that will save humanity. Battle your enemies in JRPG-style turn-based combat and explore a 2.5D isometric landscape featuring hand-drawn visuals. Friend Dark Mika wrote in a review of this one. Let's see what she has to say, shall we?
I guess so.
Might as well, right? I mean, she went through the trouble.
Yeah, she did, and she writes very well.
Sometimes. Anyway, she has to say, Azure Saga Pathfinder is a 2.5 isometric turn-based RPG. You play as Sync in the year, no fucking clue, with his droid companion Noir. They're part of a nomadic space-faring people. Their home planet, Azure, was ruined thanks to the advances in technology. They set up space colonies and shot out to the stars in search of a new home. Well, your dad was sent to one, and the colony was running like a bitch, leaving his ass there, so you decided, no, fuck you. I'm gonna save my dad. And you're promptly shot right the fuck out of space and crash land on a random planet. Yeah. Plan succeeded? Oh, wait, no. Your ship's fucked. Never mind. Now you have to find out about the planet on your own and find some way back to space to save your father. Problem, technology here is, well, it doesn't exist really, and they have carts and basic tools. It's basically medieval times.
This is great.
Anyway, this game lets you move around effectively on a gridded surface constantly. You're not locked to them, but they are visually there to help you get around. The maps are interesting. They fill out as you find things, which I'm always on the fence about, but this time it works well because of how the map is done. Every major area is listed for you to enter. Inside are individual rooms, squares on the map that get filled out when you enter them. That's why it works so well. These maps are puzzles you get to solve to fully show the entire map, and I like that. Combat is easy and happens at random, a la Pokemons. Yay, Pokemans.
Gotta catch a few.
I don't know why that tickled me so much. Gotta catch a few. Seems to be based on a timer, so it's not fully random, but it feels random enough. The battles are turn-based, where your whole team goes, then the enemy team goes. You start off with just two characters, Sync and Noir, but you gain more through your travels, inhabitants of the land. You can have three characters fighting at once. The enemy can have from one to three. It's random, but it's slanted heavily to three enemies showing up 90% of the time. Each major area has monsters of a different level. It doesn't tell you that, but you notice it as you fight things in there, since their levels are listed. Just like the map, you have no info on monsters till you beat them the first time, which is also interesting. Also, every monster has a type, and certain characters do more damage to types of monsters, which is interesting, even though I personally don't use that bit, much to my detriment, but I'm lazy, so yeah.
What you gonna do?
The story is supposedly 50 hours long, and longer if you want to do all the side stuff. Most of the side stuff is fairly easy and fast to do, since most of the time you get a quest from someone in an area to do something in that area and then return to them and get your reward. That was a long sentence. There's a couple of areas that are side areas, whole chunks of dungeons to complete dungeons? What? And I find that they're generally needed because you need the stat benefits of doing that, because this game is not easy. It's not super hard, but it leans towards harder, but that's probably because I'm lazy, as mentioned previously. The whole elemental thing and, you know, all of that might actually help out a bit, Dark Mika. You should, you know, look into that maybe.
That's part of it. That's what makes the game tick, is getting the whole elemental weakness and strength thing going, I would think.
Seriously, you gotta do that. Anyway, all the characters level up even if you don't use them, but the ones you do level faster is those who take the most damage. As those who do the most damage take the most damage and kill 2 to 3 enemies in a single attack get all the bonus XP. There's no voice acting, it's all written. Most of the writing is okay, but sometimes it shows English isn't the dev's first language, but overall it's pretty great. Most of the written stuff isn't long either. Even story bits play out fairly quickly, but it still gives you just the right amount of information, which is nice. Only issue, the story is good, but it's all pretty obvious. No special twists or anything, it's pretty obvious how things are going to go down, but we've seen similar stories play out hundreds of times, so of course it's obvious and predictable. For $13, yeah, get it. It's cheap, it's fun, and it'll give you a nice long amount of gameplay, too. Story might be a bit obvious and, easy to tell what's going to happen, but who cares? It's a fun 50 to 80 hour game with some attractive character art.
Honestly, that's how I feel about Elves, is that we get older and older, the twist, hiding the twists and turns are getting harder and harder for them in games anyway.
Yeah.
So I don't hold that accountable so long as the journey to get to the obvious result was still fun.
Very true. I mean, games can be predictable as long as they're still fun.
Exactly. And also characterization moves, it goes a long way too. Like if you like the characters, you're like, oh, well, clearly the church is the villain, but hey, I like the characters who are fighting the church. That's cool, right?
Oh, man. Anyway, the game sounds really cool. Hope it shows up on other platforms. That would be really awesome because, you know, Xbox in particular could use more RPGs. Developers, right? Eh?
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Pretty much. But one more game to talk about with you, and that is called Seum Speedrunners from Hell, developed by Pine Studio, published by Head Up Games. This one hit PS4 March 8th for $14.99 after being on other platforms already. This is kind of a long intro, but, you know, normally I try to cut these down, but it was so damn funny, I just wanted to read the whole thing.
I wanted to do it. The premise is so funny.
Well, then go for it. Do you have the whole intro
I don't have the whole intro. I'm just going to describe it. Essentially, you're a country yokel just doing his thing, laying on the couch watching TV, hard day at work, nice six-pack, ready to chug, and then knock, knock, who's at the door? Fucking Satan. Just go to the house, take your beer. And, of course, this guy wants his beer, so he doesn't reach around and says, no, not my beer, you can't take it. Satan cuts his hand off. And as he's leaving the house with the beer, the character picks up a record and throws it and cuts Satan's hand off and then takes it into the garage, sews it on, and then opens a portal to hell, which is in a sewer grate or some shit. And he follows Satan into hell to get his beer.
Do you want to hear the official write-up of it?
Yes, because I'm curious.
Marty was having a late morning breakfast and minding his own business. The demon knocking on the door wasn't part of his morning routine. Before Marty was able to open the door, the hellbreed smashed in the doors. A fierce brawl commenced and Marty lost his right arm, but at least the demon also lost his head. Unfortunately, whilst the brawl erupted, more demons entered his garage and stole his last batch of limited edition Walrus Ale trademark. Now Marty has become furious. He ripped off the demon's arm and did some DIY to reattach his arm back to himself. The demon is no looker, but gee, it casts some nasty fireballs. Marty's afterlife has now a single purpose: go to hell and get his beer back.
It is. That was really freaking good.
Yeah.
And I also find I get a bigger chuckle at the fact that it wasn't after work in the evening. He was drinking beer at breakfast.
Morning routine. Like, get fucked up.
Get tankered.
So the story's incredible. What's the gameplay?
Well, the gameplay is actually pretty straightforward, but that's not bad at all. It is essentially a first-person Doom-esque speedrun game. So you boot the game up. You go to a series of 10 levels, and each of those levels, there is pretty much a series of obstacles. You have to pretty much sprint to the end of the level. Usually, there will be a variety of obstacles in play, mostly related to fire, because, hey, you're in hell, right? There's lava, spikes, anti-gravity, mumbo-jumbo nonsense, gates that you have to activate in order, and so on and so forth. But in addition to being able to run, well, I see that's kind of a good thing and a bad thing, that your abilities are limited, but you unlock more of them as you go. But essentially, your main hub of abilities consists of running and throwing fireballs with the button, which when you press the trigger, it slows down time, and you get an aim cursor. You can throw fireballs, or rather lob them, which can be used to trigger switches and damage walls and break down obstacles and things of that nature. So you're basically utilizing your arsenal with the occasional magic power-up, such as anti-gravity reversal. You can kind of essentially fly, and you're trying to get through levels before the time runs up. And at the end of every elevator floor, there is a bonus boss level, which is essentially just a harder level with an interesting gimmick in it. and you beat that level and you unlock the access to the elevator to go down a level. So instead of going up to 2, 3, 4, you're going -2 and -3 because clearly you got to reach Satan. So, in addition to the normal game, while you're playing it, there is also beer hidden on each stage. And when I first learned that there was beer hidden, I kind of figured it'd be like those typical games where it's like, okay, the beer is on the path somewhere. Maybe look off to the side slightly and grab it and then end the level with the beer and the guitar. Oh, no. The beers in this game, the hidden object, mind you, they are hidden in places where you're not, sometimes you're not going to beat the level after you get it because you can't get back out. Like, they intended for you to really get dirty and looking for, looking around these levels and then witnessing the levels that they've crafted. Like, there'll be one where you have to jump off the bridge and land on the ledge beneath the bridge, holding on one of the pillars holding the bridge up. There's a beer on the backside and you have to kill yourself because you can't get back out. But hey, you got a beer!
That's actually really cool for a game to do.
Yeah, I thought it was awesome. Like, it made it so I was going back to levels and just putzing around and not caring about the time, just trying to see where I could find the beer. And if you find enough beers on each level, you unlock the bonus level on each world too. And then those have a secret object too, which is not beer, which is actually bacon, because hey, breakfast. And I don't know what happens if you collect all of those, but I'm hoping it's something cool.
I can only imagine it would be something cool, given everything this game is doing.
It's great. It's like random advertisements for beer hanging up on the walls, because why not? It's hell, right? You got to drink something.
Yeah, you got to get that walrus ale.
And there's like random quips going back and forth every once in a while. Like, the devil will be like, hey, welcome. Hey, barbecue there, Marty. Or just say some ridiculous nonsense, which is kind of chuckle-worthy at first. And then later on, it just kind of becomes sound. But it's still sound that you appreciate. It's like, hey, I like hearing the fact that he's taunting me. That means I'm getting my ass handed to me. And then Marty will make random quips like, oh, hell yeah! And he still sounds very bumpkin-y. It's really funny.
I still want to say Morty every time I see Marty.
Why are you drinking beer, Morty?
Oh, gee, Rick.
I don't know, Rick.
Rick. Oh, what are we going to do? So for now, he said a lot of good stuff about the game. Are there any kind of negatives about it?
No. I mean, I can't do it.
We can't do voices at all.
Oh, yeah, we can. Don't tell yourself short. I can't think of too many bad things about it. I mean, controls can go either way, because while the controls do work, it is a first-person game, and when it comes to first-person and platformer, you're going to have problems just by virtue of the product.
Oh, yeah.
So that doesn't make the game bad. It's more about knowing what you're getting into when you boot the game up. It's a first-person speedrun game. It's right there. But that would be one thing. And aside from that, I've had no gripes with the game. There was no performance issues. Games like this where you constantly die and start over, you want it to be able to snap you right back to the start and start over, and it's really quick to do that too. You don't feel like you lost any time. I will say one thing that may be a gripe, but it's less a gripe and more just me sucking, is the endless runner mode that they have in the game too, where it's just an endless corridor that's randomly generated, and there's like a number of like different obstacles that exist there, but sometimes it'll just be linked, and you're being chased by a grinder, by the way. I forgot to mention that. And it honestly kind of bugs me, because sometimes it'll be built in a way where I don't even know how they even expect you to be able to beat the environment. Like, obviously they have to, because some people on the speed runs had some amazing distances, but I personally was like, how in the hell do they expect you to pull this shit off? This layout is bullshit. But lo and behold, it is. It's there. It works. Do it. But honestly, I thought it was a great game. It was another case of, oh, also I got to mention, the music is great too. It's genuine, like rock metal. No vocals though, thank God. just instruments, and they're fantastic. Like, I really enjoyed it.
Nice. So $15 on this one. What do you think?
I think it's great. It's definitely worth the scratch.
Good stuff. Awesome. 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 Morty. Some good games out today, huh?
Yeah, this was a good episode. All hits, pretty much.
Yeah, I hope there's some other good stuff in the rest of the episode. I should look down at my list and see. He liked that one. He liked that one. He thought that was okay. Yeah, there's some good stuff coming up.
Yeah, buddy.
The joys of recording in order, right?
He knows in advance.
Yeah, pretty much. I cheated. I time traveled and listened to the rest of the episode already.
But you wanted time travel's awesome. Just gotta be careful. It can go sour real easy.
Yeah, it can. Oh, man. Well, Pernell, always good having you on chatting about these games. Do you have any final thoughts to sum it all up?
Nope, just play those games and have fun doing it. Time is short. Play hard.
All right, next game to talk about is called Chrono Blade, released by Anway on March 1st on iOS and Android. It is a free-to-play game with in-app microtransactions. Put your fighting skills to the test. Chrono Blade is the only side-scrolling RPG brawler featuring explosive arcade-style combat and real-time synchronous PvP action. Because it's on iOS, we're calling in Jacob Garner. How you doing?
I'm doing okay. How about you?
Well, I'm putting up with you. So tell us about Chrono Blade. What is this game?
Man, fuck off. So it's a beat 'em up. I mean, like, it dresses itself up with some nice RPG stuff, but I mean, let's be honest, it's really it's really Golden Axe with four different looking characters. And you pretty much just move through the different stages. You have to beat up a bunch of enemies. At the end of each stage, there is a boss that you have to beat. And you also have a time limit. Now, you have to beat each level in under 3 minutes, I believe. It might actually be 2 minutes, 45 seconds, but like it's somewhere around. Time
limits in a mobile game.
Yeah, it's actually really frustrating, cause like initially I couldn't figure that out. Like, you know, why, like, cause I was definitely kicking a boss's ass and then all of a sudden I would die. And I'm just like, what the hell, like, why? And then suddenly I'm realizing, oh shit, this is where the RPG, or like, the, I don't know why the hell I pronounced each letter, like, RPG.
I don't know either.
Yeah, I don't know. But this is where the RPG elements come in, and you have to upgrade your character's abilities, which is, like, different magic, or, like, projectile attacks, stuff like that. There's also like shields that you can upgrade. You can upgrade your weapons, your gear, all that other kind of stuff. And so after I upgraded my character, all my character's shit, then all of a sudden, like, the boss was easy to beat. And I was just like, oh, okay. So that's what I had to do.
Go figure. You upgrade your character and the game gets easier. Who'da thunk?
It's really revolutionary, Joe. I don't think anybody's ever done this before. I mean, you guys got to check this out. Oh, man.
So it sounds like the game's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I had an absolute blast. Now, I played it pretty much with just the Game Vice. Actually, it's not even pretty much. It just is the Game Vice. Because that's what you had told me to do, because that's like what all the people were demoing it with. And it is an absolute perfect fit for it. I really enjoy it. I mean, like, there's a daily login bonus that you can get. Like, the game gives you a bunch of stuff to help you along. So far, I haven't needed to purchase anything, but I've been playing the shit out of it. So, I guess as long as you keep viewing ads and logging in every day, like, you're going to progress rather nicely.
Which is good. I know a lot of mobile games put too much emphasis on, you know, just ad after ad after ad after ad after ad, or money, 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 money.
Right. Yeah, this is one to definitely check out. It's a lot of fun.
I do want to say, people who are interested in it, make sure you do it at home, because the first time I fired up the game, it was like, there's 350 meg of content to download. Should we download it now?
That's actually one of the negatives I was going to bring up. It's now, granted, it's pretty great that they seem to update this game fairly regularly. But the problem is that when they do update it, I'd say it seemed to be like every 3 to 5 days, it was just that big, like, fuck off 350 meg download. And so, you know, for a mobile game, you know, you're supposed to pick up, play, get going, and then go off and do whatever you need to do. With Chrono Blade, it was like fired up, wait 5 to 10 minutes for your download, you know. And by that time, like, I should be, like, you know, going off the class, going out the door, like, you know, finish pooping, like, whatever. So there was that. And then also, I'm not entirely, like, take this part with a grain of salt, because I'm not entirely sure if it's my iPhone's battery, whether it's dying. But as I was playing stuff with the Game Vice, Chrono Blade and another game called Dead Trigger 2, both of those games seem to be huge battery sucks on my phone.
Okay.
So, if you're going to play this game for a long extended period of time, you are either going to want to make sure that you have your phone plugged in or you've got an external battery pack with you.
Gotcha. Well, more intensive games are going to do that to batteries no matter what.
True. But yeah, this one's a definite, definite check it out. It's one of my favorite games I've had to review thus far.
Cool. And did you want to touch on the Game Vice anymore? Because I know that's been like your baby daddy for the past couple of weeks now.
I absolutely love the thing. The controls, they all feel great for me. I know you were having some issues, but you've also got slightly bigger sausage fingers than me.
Yeah, I got fat hands.
Yeah. It felt perfect in my hands. So I don't know. I just didn't have the same issues as you on that. The button layout seemed fine. Everything felt intuitive to it. And honestly, like the games I've been using it with, which is mainly Dead Trigger 2, Dead Trigger 2, Chrono Blade, Marvel Contest of Champions, like those are the games I've been using it with. And honestly, like all three games, it feels great. Like this is exactly what these games needed.
So worth the money, right?
Oh, absolutely. If you're big into mobile gaming, this is definitely something that you should. I realize that the price is a little bit. It could be seen as a little steep because I think it's anywhere from like $80 to $100, depending on the version that you get. But whatever, just spring for it. This is by far it's the best thing that I've had to review on here, and it could definitely change. It's a game changer. What's the word I'm looking for?
No matter what word you're looking for, I very much look forward to the Game Vice that you buy me for my belated birthday present.
No, I'm not buying you that.
Below me.
You're getting your fucking Xbox Live card like you always do.
I'm not getting anything from you.
Bullshit. I always get you something every year.
But, Jacob, always good having you on chat. I'm making you talk about one more. You talk about one more. A brand new, fresh release called Hyper Void, developed and published by InFrames Technologies, our good friends over at InFrames. This one released quite a long time ago on goddamn everything already, but Jacob, you just found out about it and thought it was a new release. So you're reviewing it. Tell us about Hyper Void.
Well, first off, I would like to blame the fine folks over at the Wing Commander Combat Information Center, which you can visit at wcnews.com.
Nope.
It's a big Wing Commander fan site, but they also talk about other space sims and other, video games that take place in outer space. And they had run a quick blurb about it, and the way that they had worded it was that it had just arrived on Xbox One. And so I'm like, oh shit, this game looks tight. I'll message Joe about it. And then you inform me that no, the game actually came out 3 years ago, I think.
It's been a while. Yeah. It's definitely been a while.
Yeah. It's an embarrassing amount of time, but
anyways, hit Xbox over 2 years ago, January of 2016 is when it hit Xbox One.
That's kind of modern, right?
And it was on PlayStation before that. So, yeah, new release. Tell me, what did you think of Hyper Void?
I really enjoy it. It's not exactly the most mind-blowing game of all, but if you're familiar with games like Tempest and its, spin-off Tempest 2000, and then other similar games that have hit Xbox Live Arcade and all that other kind of stuff over the years. It's kind of like that. You move along a plane and you have to shoot down the enemies. And in Hyper Void, you're given three weapons and it's pretty much just, you have to deal with wave after wave after wave and then you move on to the next area. There's not exactly, a lot to it. However, the graphics are pretty neat. The visuals in the background are pretty great. And the music is, I found it to be kind of hypnotic. I enjoyed
such a good soundtrack. It really is.
Yeah. I really enjoyed, what I got to play. I guess the easiest way to put it would be is that it's Space Giraffe's smarter cousin.
If the guys at InFrames are listening, I do want to say, where is our Xbox One X enhanced patch with 4K HDR visuals? Because this game, oh my God, I can only imagine this game in 4K.
That would be pretty damn tight. That or like a VR version of it?
There is VR on PlayStation.
Oh, damn.
Again, you are so far behind the curve on shit. It's just, it's mind-blowing.
Yeah, have you heard of this game called Killer Instinct?
It's a rumor. I heard about it once or twice.
I think it's going to be a pretty great fighting game.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to get that one on the show.
I think it's coming out pretty soon for Xbox One.
I'm waiting for you to start talking about like some Xbox 360 releases from 4 years ago now.
Oh shit, you want me to?
No. $10 on Hypervoid. What is your verdict, Jacob?
Absolutely.
Good. I was going to say, if I went through the hassle of bugging them to get a code for you 2 years after launch to have this little make fun of Jacob segment on the show, just for you to give it a bad review, I was going to punch you in the dick so fucking hard.
First off, we both know that you're going to punch me in the dick next time you see me anyway.
Confirmed. And
second, you're like, ugh, it took me so much time. Like, come on, let's be honest. Your email to them was like, yo, one of my reviewers is a complete idiot. This is hilarious. Could you please give me a code?
Again, confirmed. Jacob, always good having you on chatting about games. Any final thoughts to sum it up?
You know, I'm surprised. I still have yet to be talking about KB Toys coming back.
Well, you got to come on like a normal episode, not a review segment.
Oh, well, okay.
I don't do news during reviews. We have a quote format where, you know, we do news and then reviews, and then if there's an interview, it's either before or after. Then there's music thrown in there, so it's not really a format, but it's kind of a format.
It's a decent, like, you know, it works. I mean, after like 360 odd episodes, you've kind of figured out a format at this point. Although, yeah. Another thing I would like to say, apparently, I believe today is the anniversary of the first time I was ever on the show.
And by the time the episode is out, it is no longer the anniversary.
Oh, crap. Yeah, right. Whatever. But
it's the anniversary week.
Right, that's fair. Yeah, because I believe episode 7 is the first time I was ever on the show. So, I was there talking about pre-orders, like, bonuses and DLC.
Oh, in the simpler times at the video game store with Bogue playing Man vs. Wild.
Yeah, that. And I think, what name was I given? Sweatpants?
Yeah, Sweatpants.
Yeah.
So, Sweatpants, any final thoughts to sum it up so I can stop recording?
Nah, I got nothing.
Hate you so much.
Love you.
All right, moving on from Jacob, next game to talk about is called Crest, an indirect god sim developed and published by Create Sleep. It released March 8th on Steam for $9.99. Become a god in this indirect god sim. Influence and try to control your followers using commandments, but beware, free will leaves these open to interpretation. Will you create a flourishing civilization or lead them into cannibalism? I kind of have a feeling that we're going in the cannibalism direction because Ian Griffin checked this one out. Ian, how are you doing?
Hey, not too bad. Yes, I did play Crest.
Did everyone eat each other?
In one game, they started to.
How did I know?
But it wasn't like an immediate thing. Basically how the whole thing works is you start out with a village and you have a certain number of points and you use these spend these points on creating commandments. And it's basically like a very simple, three part formula. I mean, you pick your subject, you pick your verb, or you pick your target, you pick your verb, and then you pick what you're going to do. So basically, like, you know, for an example is people that live in the jungle, pick berries. So. Anyone that falls under that, you know, the definitions of that particular commandment, so anyone living in the jungle, they'll immediately start going out and wandering around and pick berries to collect for food. And eventually, as you play along, you'll unlock more words to kind of work on different things. And one of the things that they can do is, like, if they're not necessarily too fond of one of your commandments, they might pitch what is called an association, which is sort of like a variation. Like, you know, for example, you know, like the cannibalism thing. I'm not quite sure how they made the leap in logic, because I want to say there's like people who live in the savannah hunt antelope, or no, hunt, eat antelope. That's what it was. Eat the antelope. And then they're like, no, we're not kind of fond of that. Like, how about instead of that, how about we, the people of the savannah, eat the people of the jungle? And when that association pops up, you can spend your faith points to either condone it or condemn it. The only problem is that if you condemn it, they kind of get pissed about that, and their faith in you kind of drops. Mm. Now, this, and sometimes it can be, you know, funny and stuff like that, but it kind of leads into one of the big cons of the game, is that you can only spend, like, the points are accrued over a matter of time based upon how much faith your particular cities have in you. And if for whatever reason, like, for example, they start making all these associations that you're like, no, don't fucking do that, they'll start getting pissed off at you. And the more pissed off they are, the longer it takes to get those points back. So depending upon how the game kind of goes, in a way, there's a little ideological RNG involved, because, you know, you could pitch because they kind of develop a certain type of culture. And the culture dictates what they like and don't like. And, for example, one game I played, they ended up being profiteers. One of the problems with being a profiteer is that they hate reproducing, because reproducing makes more people for population, and more population means the wealth gets distributed more evenly, and it's generally less for them, you know, more cuts to the stash.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But, yeah, but the problem with that is that if they're not going to have kids, you can't really grow the city and expand and, you know, just kind of evolve the game as it should.
Yeah, so fuck them, let them die off, and work with someone else.
Yeah, well, that usually involves starting a new game. So the basic problem is that sometimes it can really turn into a waiting game, depending on how things evolve. And it is very indirect. And on the upside, there's like a lot of like information panels to give you a clue in as to, like, you know, what kind of things your people like. You can actually check out individual members and check out what they're doing, why they're doing it. You can see whether or not they need more food, whether they're happy, whether they're pissed off, whether, you know, all this and that. But you can't really do a whole lot with this information, because ultimately all you can really do is once every couple of minutes drop a command in, or a commandment. And usually it has to be like a really important one, like eat your food you're gathering. You know, and on top of this, you also have to try to maintain a balance of the ecosystem, because it's entirely possible for you to just turn your island into a complete barren wasteland and then your people die.
Interesting.
But, yeah, but, you know, the ultimate problem is that it seems like a very novel concept, but once the novelty wears off, it's really boring and there's really nowhere to go with it. I mean, there's no real achievement system. There's nothing you're trying to accomplish. I mean, the whole point of the game is basically try to grow and spread the populace and not completely fuck up the ecosystem.
So, I mean, just get further than last. It sounds like classic gaming. Just get as far as you can, and then when you die, start over and get as far as you can.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, but it's the sort of thing where a lot of people might get really bored of it. Like I said, once that initial novelty comes off, I mean, even if you just play to screw around, you know, like even if you put out a commandment, you know, middle, like young people eat the old geriatric people, you know, just real stupid kicks and giggles stuff. Like even that will just probably get old after a while, because there's only so much you can do. There's only so many words you can work with to create combinations for.
Yeah.
And even then, like I said, depending on how well received or hated those things are, you might be waiting for like 10 minutes just to get the points to put out another commandment.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, if someone really wanted to, they could probably make a very good argument that Crest is kind of sort of an indirect idol game.
Well, it is an indirect god sim, so I guess that's close enough, right? You mentioned no achievements. The game actually does have Steam achievements, but looking at the completion percentages, I can kind of understand why you didn't get any. The most achieved achievement only has an 11% attainment rate, if that's a word.
So. No, I got you. Well, I guess I should probably clarify that. Like, I don't, when I said achievement, not necessarily like Steam achievements, but like, you know, like what am I trying to shoot for?
Like an end goal.
For, Yeah. Back. You know, like, for example, like, take Civilization. I mean, you could go out and conquer everyone. You can go for, like, a cultural victory. You can go for a diplomatic victory or something like that. You know, research and all kinds of stuff. You can, you know, try to strive for a certain flow of what you're trying to achieve and accomplish. I mean, but ultimately, it's like you throw a commandment out there and hope to God it sticks. And sometimes, you know, like I said, when you're waiting for those points to come back, sometimes they'll throw up an association that isn't quite what you had intended, but kind of sort of close enough that you'll condone just to make them happy.
Yeah. Oh, man. Well, $10 on this one. What do you think of it?
If it's the sort of thing that is in your wheelhouse, if it's the sort of style of game that you know that you don't mind just burning time on, give it a try. If you're not, you know, if you're new to the whole indirect God Sim concept and you're kind of on the fence about it, I would wait. I mean, I don't know if this is a finished product. I don't know if the devs have any intention of adding more or trying to expand the scope of it. And in a way, if they do, I mean, this could be a phenomenal game.
Yeah.
But as it is, like I said, I mean, you'll get a couple hours of fun out of it, but unless you're the sort of person that's into that specific style of gaming, you'll probably move on to something else.
Makes sense. Well, hopefully they'll keep pumping some content in there, keeping it fresh, and hopefully it shapes up to be a better game in the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, like I said, I mean, there's a lot of potential. I mean, it's a good foundation to start with. And if they, you know, really push the envelope, it can definitely be up there with, like, the old black and white games.
Yeah. Oh, man. Well, always good having you on. Do you have any final thoughts to sum up Crest?
Don't eat your children.
Good life advice, really, overall, when you think about it.
Yeah, pretty much. Don't eat your children.
All right, next game to talk about is called The Long Reach, developed by Painted Black Games, published by Merge Games. It released March 15th on the Switch for $14.99. The Long Reach takes place in New Hampshire, the fictional town of Bervaux. You don't play in a post-apocalyptic world or explore a fairy-filled fantasy world. You're in the thick of it, just around the corner from the place where you buy your groceries, in a town filled with colorful characters, puzzles, and a shock of discovery. Wait, weren't we supposed to say joy of discovery? That can't be right. And to make sense of that introduction, Chris Taylor, welcome back. How are you doing?
I'm doing good.
So, that description.
Yeah, that's a description. That describes a video game.
What? Tell us about the game that it is describing, because that is a very mysterious and vague description.
It's a very mysterious and vague game, Joe.
Helpful. So.
Okay, so The Long Reach is what essentially boils down to a kind of point-and-click puzzle-solving game, adventure game sort of thing. And it actually reminds me quite a lot of The Dark Side Detective, which I talked about a while ago.
Mm-hmm.
Only this is a little bit more of a serious game and less funny, although it does give you the option to be pretty funny. So you start the game as some guy who is going to the grocery store to do something for his, like, apparently terrible girlfriend. And you go into the store, have some conversations with people, and, not to give anything away, but that's a false start. It starts the game after you do the events in the store, and then you find out you're actually a scientist. And, things go awry up in your science lab, so you have to walk around and figure out what to do, how to get out of there, you have to, like, rendezvous with somebody. And so the way that you do all this stuff is by investigating everything, which, instead of having a mouse interface like the Dark Side Detective did, in this one, you actually run around as if it were a platformer, except that you don't actually do any jumping or fighting or anything like that. It's the game, basically, as you run by things, the game highlights them in yellow, and then you can interact with them. And it tells you, it's everything from just regular flavor text to, you know, items that you can get. And then you know, if you interact with them, you have an inventory option where if you select an item and then use it with the thing that is highlighted, then it will interact the two and you can find out if, you know, that works. And as this goes, this is one of those kind of games where you're going to wind up with all kinds of random things. Like, I think the first three items I picked up was a coffee mug and a rubber bone and a candy bar.
Nice.
Yeah, so having to figure out how to accomplish your mission with those things is the flavor of this game.
It sounds pretty standard adventure game fare. Question is, the description I read did not match any of the screenshots I saw for the game.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. So, like, it plays out basically like a dark mystery. It's full of ambience. There's some rooms that you go into where, like, the background noise is so creepy that you just really want to get out of there.
But and tell me you played with headphones.
Oh, of course.
Nice.
Yeah, well, you got to play with headphones. visually, there's nothing in the early part of it that's too bad, but it's more, like, bizarre things, like finding that a person you were talking to earlier in the game is now running around on all fours and like a dog in and out of the shadows. And that actually plays into the stage. Like, you have to do something with that person to move on. So, and then, you know, there's a screenshot of walking upon a murder scene and that'll happen too. And, it's really like, it's effectively a game that doesn't show all of its cards right away. You don't know what the threat is. You're not even sure about the person you're going to see that is supposed to explain it all to you, because it's the same terrible girlfriend character that you're introduced to through her boyfriend earlier in the game, and you find out that she's kind of uptight and unreliable, perhaps. So it's all that kind of good stuff. The storyline is very compelling. Like, I definitely want to keep, you know, jamming dog bones into elevator buttons to see what's next.
Sounds good. So $15 on this one. What do you think about it?
$15. I mean, that's a fair price. I think I believe that this would really, really tickle the fancy of people who like creepy games. People who like, you know, point and click adventures that are a little maybe faster paced. I mean, it does have a run button.
Yay. Running. Yay.
And, yeah, it's just, it's really cool. And I, you know, I appreciate the 8-bit noir sort of look to it. Like, it's all the characters are very pixelated and, you know, look like they came from a old DOS game or something. But it also has, like, more modern effects and modern, like, soundtracks and things like that. So it's a cool style. I like it.
I like when games can blend old and new together in a really good way.
Yeah, the Switch seems to be prime grounds for that.
Yeah, and then and playing games with headphones, too, because the whole portability thing.
Exactly, yeah. I have all these nice headphones that I can just plug right in. It's great.
But we're going to go from one of the darkest games of the show to one of the happiest games of the show. Toki Tori, developed and published by Two Tribes. This one will be out March 30th on the Switch for $4.99. Toki Tori, a surprisingly heroic chicken, isn't very athletic. He can't even jump. Luckily, he has some great tools at his disposal, including the Telewarp, Freeze-O-Matic, and Insta-Rock. Creative thinking and problem-solving are required to collect all the eggs in each level, but don't worry. When you get stuck, you can always rewind time. Chris, tell us about this one.
The description gave everything away. No,
cool,
just
so $4.99. What?
Okay, well, actually, I mean, I talked about this game's sequel pretty recently, and that actually compelled me to play through one of the newer remakes, which is the 3DS remake. And so I actually have the 3DS remake, like, fresh on my mind, and when I started playing this, it's actually way better. So out of, like, all the remakes from the Game Boy Color is when this started up until now, this game has been remade, like, several times.
Mm-hmm.
And this time it's actually in HD. The soundtrack is, like, really, really cool. I really love the stage theme. It's like a pastoral, fluty, folk theme, but with a banjo in the background. Like, that's for the first level, of course. Then, The second level stage music, I think, is actually even better, but I won't give away what all the stages are, because this does, as every game, starts off like in the most peaceful, like pastoral type of surroundings. And yeah, so you walk around with this little guy, and he can climb up a single step kind of thing, but if it's more than like two steps, then he cannot. And the key is to try and figure out the course through the puzzle, through the actual lay of the land, that will get you, that won't get you stuck, that will allow you to get all of the eggs. And because, you know, you have to gather all the eggs to get through the stage. Mm-hmm. And of course, once you do, you're instantly out of the stage. So if the last egg is in a place where you can't get out of, then that's the one you want to get last so that you can get out of there. And it is indeed true. It has a rewind feature. It actually looks like a VHS rewinding, which is really funny to me.
Yeah, I saw when you were streaming how you were rewinding earlier. I like when games do that.
Yeah, it's really cool. And you can rewind it all the way back to the start of the stage if you like, or just choose to start over. So the main thing on this game, besides finding the route, is utilizing tools that they give you. And each stage has a predetermined set of tools that you get. So you can build a, like, there's one where you can build a bridge across a gap and, you know, walk across it that way. There's one where you can teleport yourself. This game deals a lot in teleportation, which makes me think that there might be maybe some more magical things afoot rather than just finding eggs. Or it's just because it's an old game, so they, you know, you just factor in magic, because why not? There's actually a thing where you can move certain rocks and pillars in later levels. There's all kinds. Of course, a freeze gun, which is in the form of a bazooka, so I really like that they give you a freaking bazooka in this game. Like, that's what we needed. And yeah, so it's all about using those tools, the limited amount that you can. Sometimes they have infinite uses. It just depends on the stage. And yeah, it's all about getting to the end, getting the next stage, unlocking all those bonus stages, all those harder difficulty stages. There's so many gosh darn stages in this game.
Yeah, I hear you saying stages. I know the second game was more kind of like an, I don't want to say open world, but like an open adventure style. I'm guessing this is more just level based.
Yeah, this is a little different from the second one in that sense. So if you're going to go for one or the other, then, you know, do pay attention to the differences.
Well, this one is only $5. So what is your verdict on this one?
Oh, yeah, go ahead and get it. I mean, it's classic, like, platform-based puzzles. Music's great. The graphics are great. There's no real weaknesses I could find in it. It gets really hard in certain points, but I never really found myself like I was able to figure out things pretty, you know, pretty quickly, and I'm not that smart, so.
Yeah. I know.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm right so, there yeah, with
go
you.
Ahead and get it. Go ahead and get it just for the sheer amount of content, because it's got quite a lot.
Now, if no one has ever played Tokitori before, is it better to start with the first one, or is the second one for $15 the better game to just start there?
Well, you see, I started with the second one, so it's hard to say that you would be missing out. I mean, if you want to just play the second one, that's totally fine. The two games are largely unconnected. They just have the same character. I think what it is that because Tokitori, the original, is available already on so many platforms that the developer or publisher might have already assumed that you already have it in some form or another. Like, it was actually one of the rewards. Like, you could just get the game, the remake, for no cost, or for the cost of, like, gold coins on the Club Nintendo thing, like, just a few months ago. So, you know, I think it's just that they didn't want to charge more money for this, but they're both really stellar games. If you want to start with the first one just to get a cheaper game, then certainly do that. It's well worth it. The $15 one, though, it's entirely its own product, and I recommend it on that price level, too.
Cool. Sounds good. We got one final game to talk about tonight, and that is called Swim Out, developed and published by Lozenge Labs. Release March 20th on the Switch for $5.99. Dive into the relaxing and refreshing atmosphere of Swim Out, a strategic turn-based puzzle game that will transport you into a sunny day by the swimming pool, the river, or the sea. Plan each of your strokes wisely and be sure to never cross any other swimmer's path if you want to peacefully enjoy the sea view on a cozy chaise lounge. Chris, tell us about Swim Out.
That description. They're trying really hard not to say this is a stressful as hell turn-based puzzle game. Because they wrapped it up in this really pleasing aesthetic is the thing. Okay, so Swim Out is one of those games. Okay, so there's two things I can compare it to. One of those is actually in Etrian Odyssey, the RPG, where if you're in a certain floor and it has an FOE, which is an enemy that can move like one or even two spots for every one spot that you move, or sometimes they move once every two spots. Like, your thing is you have to avoid them and you have to get through the maze in a way that they can't catch you. And that's a lot like what this game is, except that it's a bunch of people in a swimming pool. So it starts off with just, you know, trying to get from one end of the pool to the other. And there's like, you know, two swimmers in your way. I think the first stage might have even been one. But, you know, they move in a predictable pattern. Every time you move, they move. So it's just figuring out where you can get like across them, put some distance between you and them and get across them and get to the other side. And the game quickly mounts in all kinds of varieties of swimmers and or just people sitting at the pool who you can't run into them either. They're kind of like a no touch area. And, you know, they got the backstroke people who move once every two moves, all this other stuff. And then, yeah, the path from one end of the pool to the other becomes more and more elaborate. And another thing that they kind of enter in is beach balls, which you can throw at a person to stun them for three moves. And then after which they just go right back to normal, which is really funny to me.
Well, someone just pegged me with a beach ball and knocked me unconscious for a couple of minutes. I'll just go right back to my breaststroke.
It's like, well, I didn't drown, so I better keep moving. So, the simplicity of the game and the you know, sort of one frame at a time movements, it's like there's no real in-between animations. It's like you got your standing still animation and then your swimming animation and or your standing still frame and your swimming frame. It reminds me a lot of Mom Hid My Game in that sense. And especially that it just gets more and more bizarre and it's got the really plain background of a swimming pool and I suppose later a river and an ocean, which I would really like to see because I didn't get past the swimming pool yet. I got several stages in though, and
it's a tough game. After watching you play, I actually picked it up myself since it was fairly cheap.
Nice.
And wow, did it kick my ass.
Yeah, it will do that eventually. You really have to do the whole chess thing of like, you know, studying it five moves ahead and like, you know, look at the cause and reaction of certain things. Like it's one of those games. It really, despite its looks, pokes you right in the brain meats.
The brain meats. Yeah. When you were streaming it, you even kind of made allusion to the whole chess thing when you got trapped and you were just like, well, checkmate. I'm like, chess.
It was, yeah, because sometimes, because they won't move until you move, so it's like if you find yourself in a situation where from all sides you've got a swimmer coming at you because you made a mistake, then it is checkmate, and then you just have to, well, I guess you could restart without actually running into them, but it's funny to run into them because it's just the penalty for running into another swimmer is just you hear a coach whistle go beep, and then you just start the stage over.
Clearly it's a lifeguard whistle.
Oh, yeah, lifeguard whistle, I guess so. I meant coach's whistle and that's the name of the device.
Yeah.
Lifeguard whistle. It just goes beep. And then you just start the stage over. It's adorable in that way. So it's adorable and yet deadly because it gets pretty difficult, but really, really satisfying if you can find the end of the stage there. And, you know, I think it's among the better puzzle games of this ilk on the Switch, which since I've reviewed so many of them now, I assume there's just a whole bunch of them.
There's at least like 400 now.
Yeah, exactly. So of the 400, this is easily top 10. So
I guess $6 means a buy it, huh?
Yeah, I would say buy it. I really wish it would have had a soundtrack. It seems to have no music apart from the ambience of just hearing kids talking, and also you can sometimes hear a shower going. So I would have liked a soundtrack, but, you know, whatever. It's meant to be a just play it while you're sitting around sort of thing, you know, play a few levels. But of course, eventually you're going to run across that one level that it's like just on this side of beatable. So you're like, you're going to sit there and try it like 300 times. It's that kind of game. And if you're that, if you're the person that likes that kind of game, then this is a really good deal.
If there was a soundtrack in the game, though, I would want it to be nothing but like Muzak played through the shitty public pool speaker system.
Yes.
Where it just sounds like someone took an intercom, held it up to like a phone, and just played a song through the phone's speaker into the intercom and out of the PA speakers. That would sound awful.
Like somebody playing a CD over a Skype call.
Yeah.
That would be amazing.
Oh, man, it would. Well, Chris, thank you as always for coming on chatting about these games. And thank you to everyone else on the show for coming by and chatting. Do you have any final words to end the show?
I'm going to go back and play Mom Hid My Game now that I've mentioned it. I don't think I beat it yet. Also, anybody that's curious to know, I also I 100%ed all of King Oddball now. So
you're crazy.
Yeah, that's me.
Crazy Chris.
Crazy Chris.